Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is Rob Thrasher with Spotlight on Success. Our sponsor here is lifeandhomes.com. If you get a chance, that's not only a really cool company, up-and-coming company that's now offering franchises. We're hopefully going to have some exciting news about that this week, either tomorrow or first thing next week. We'll see how that goes, but they are offering franchises at lifeandhomes.com. And really, basically, what this company is, it's a kind of an alternate to the older-fashioned MLS systems all over the country. And what they do is they open it up. It's an open listing, is what they call it, open-source listing, or words to that effect. And so it opens it up to, like, FSBO, for sale by owners, and builders can kind of put, you know, potential properties in there, and it's just kind of more open than the old-style MLS. And not for nothing, but the business plan is brilliant, and I talked about it with David Lisi here a while ago on the show. Awesome business plan. If you're looking to maybe get into the franchising and you want to be in the kind of the newspaper/magazine/real estate industry, this would be a good place to go to check it out, lifeandhomes.com. Once again, this is Rob Thrasher. This is our Spotlight on Success, and we're looking at our military tribute series, which is what we're doing here. So just so happens that I'm a member of some clubs on Facebook, and I meet particular types of former military people. One of those is former nuclear people who are in the nuclear power field. And once again, we want to send a shout out to all the military. Thanks for all that you do. And we have a kind of an interesting twist today, as I guess one way to say it. We have a guy who was in the nuclear power field for, you know, in the Navy for a decade or whatever, in a couple of decades in nuclear power, and he's now a comedian, if you can believe that, like a nuke-turned-comedian, and it's a cool story, and again, it's our military tribute. Thanks for your service, Stephen, and everybody. This is Stephen Natarelli, otherwise known as Steve the Nuclear Guy. How you doing,
hey,
Steve?
Thanks, Rob. It's great to be here with you.
We got, we're going to start out what we do. Usually we do like past, present, and future. We try to dig into what made somebody into the kind of business person or entrepreneur that they are. And I also want to mention that, you know, entrepreneurship is a multifaceted thing, and there's a lot of people, book authors, comedians, actors, perspiring actors and models and all these people, they have to be self-promoters and entrepreneurial first and foremost. Because as talented as you might be at what you do, you got, if you can't market it, marketing is just getting the word out. If you can't get the word out and you're not a self-promoter, then it doesn't matter how good you are at what you do is what it comes down to. So, Steve, we talked a little bit about the fact that you were a Navy nuke. Can you tell me about your nuke days, your Navy days?
My nuke days, well, it's like ancient history. 1977, I had been out of high school for a few years, and I knew I needed to go back to school, and I was living in Rochester, New York, where I grew up, and I definitely wanted to get out of town, and swore I'd never go back there, and you know, that's where I am now. So, but I walked into recruiters, and I said, if I can be home for Christmas, I'll sign up today. It was in November, and it was snowing, and I left 3 days after Christmas in 1977, and I went, obviously, as you said, in the nuclear power field, and went to nuke power school in Orlando, and then up to Saratoga Springs for a prototype, and I spent 4 years in San Diego, which was very, very nice, and aboard a submarine, a fast-attack submarine, and then I went back to Saratoga to be an instructor, and then I finished up my last year in Norfolk aboard another submarine. I do tell people not to take a swipe at the beautiful city of Norfolk. That the best part of my year in Norfolk was the first 6 months I was out to sea on a submarine. So, then I finished my tour after 9 years and went back to Rochester. I didn't have a job lined up, and there's a power plant just outside of Rochester. Ended up getting a job there, and 20 years later, I was still there and itching to do something else. I had always kind of dreamed about being a comic. I remember going as a kid, that going to shows and thinking, this would really be a great way to live. And when I tell people, life got in the way, and, you know, 20, 30 years later, you know, all that time is down the river, as they say, or under the bridge, and I hadn't done anything about it. And 2002, I saw an article in the paper for an open mic, and I said, you know, I'm going to go. I've been hooked ever since. It's a great feeling to hear that immediate response from the audience, provided you're funny, of course. You know, I haven't really looked back. 2007, I walked away from my job at the power plant, and I've been basically a full-time comic since then. I tour the country. It's a dream come true.
It had to be difficult, to say the least, to get up there and put yourself out there the first time you did it. What did you have to, I mean, how did you work up the courage to get that done? Because I imagine after that it was kind of, maybe not all downhill. I mean, it's still hard. You got to write your material and, you know, again, you're self-promoting yourself, getting yourself out there in front of the mic. How hard was it to get up there your first time? Was that the hardest part of the whole thing?
The first time was fairly easy because I was doing a lot of material that was familiar to me because I had been doing it basically at work and, you know, around friends and family for years. So that was fairly easy, and I had a good show, which made it easier. But that doesn't mean that they were all good after that. And you kind of grow with that, and you learn what works and what doesn't, and you put together an act. And you're right, you do have to write all your own material. So that's a constant thing. And as you said, you have to, you really learn to promote yourself. You really have to be a self-promoter, online, websites, just getting the word out there to different bookers and clubs and just promoting yourself. You just, you know, I can do this, and sending information out. But I still get butterflies even after all this time, and as soon as I hear the first joke out of my mouth, then they kind of go away. But I think something that I'll probably always have is those initial butterflies right before I go on stage.
Right. Do you think that I know a lot of people who I've interviewed. I've interviewed a lot of former nukes and former crypto techs as well in the Navy. Do you think that in some way going through the experience of nuclear power school, being on a submarine, do you think in some way that, how did that either help you or not help you? Was that something that, because I know it's a different field. It's not like somebody goes to work, you know, 9 to 5, and, you know, the training is intense, and as well as the sub training and just being on the sub. Do you think in any way that kind of helped mold you into
it definitely did help, because a lot of times, you know, I've written about this a few times, that you experience that this is your life video will place right before your eyes, just like people say it does. And after the fact, when it's happening, you're just reacting, and because your training is so intense, you react to the situation almost without thinking, like a machine. And after the fact, when the adrenaline's kind of wearing away, that you realize that, you know, gee, I almost died. And the way to deal with that stress is a lot of times is a gallows humor, and you laugh at the fact that, you know, you came that close, and you deal with the stress that way.
Right.
And I think that helped shape a lot of my humor. And then when I went back to Saratoga to be an instructor, I taught in the classroom for a year, and I really enjoyed being in front of the class. I had a captive audience, no doubt, but a good part of that time was to relate to the students why they needed to know what I was teaching them, and you do that through sea stories and whatever to make them understand why they have to learn what you're there to teach them. And, but I do tell people that the sea stories aren't the good stories. The fun stuff happened on land. So But we'll, this is a PG show, so we won't talk about this.
Hey, thank you much. Thank you kindly for that. That little bit of self-censorship there is helpful. kind of threw me off on that one. Yeah, you know, and that happens a lot. Actually, I hear a lot of, it's kind of cool because the more people I interview, the more I find, like, things that seem like they're simple or things that don't seem like they're technically part of the education process are things that help people the most. And I just think back to, I think it was Laura with the 15-second pitch I interviewed a little while ago. She said that one of the things that helped her the most in kind of honing her business into this, again, it's kind of like an elevator pitch concept. She does 15-second pitch. And she said that one of the things that helped her the most was something that most people might strip out of an educational process, and that was the theater league that she was in. She was in a theater class. And so, like you say, being in front of the students, just like being in front of groups of people is very, very critical, I think, as a learning tool for life in general, but especially if you're going to be somebody who goes on stage, who does business proposals, who talks in front of groups for any reason at all, and most business people do speaking engagements. And a lot of them tell me that the thing that really kind of led them down the path was the one or two or 10 times that they got up in front of a group of people, whether it's classmates, other classmates, or like in your case, you know, people whose very career rides on what you're about to tell them, but to step back and just kind of be, you know, instead of being the teacher, just be the kind of life guidance thing is really important. And so I think that's kind of, that's cool that you said that, because I see a lot of that resounding, well, that one time I got up in front of the group, or I was so afraid to do the play, and I did it anyway, and then I realized that I wasn't going to die while I was up there.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, the public speaking courses tell people, you know, that it's some people are more afraid of dying than they are talking in front of a group, and public speaking courses tell their students to imagine the audience sitting in their underwear. I'm glad comedy clubs are dark. I don't want to imagine what some of my audiences look like.
Well, at least it's in the dark. You can imagine they're all really, really good looking.
Yeah.
So that maybe is helpful in a way.
Yeah.
Or you can imagine they're not even there. I mean, I know when I used to do a lot of TV interviews, I would just imagine I was talking one-on-one with the person who's there, and not that it was going to go out to, I don't know, I'd like to say millions, but it's more like thousands of people because I was in upstate New York.
Exactly.
but I imagine it's an awful lot. Go ahead.
I rehearse at home out in my garage, and my dogs probably know my act as good as I do. And so when I get on stage, it's me and my dogs. And so
bring them with you.
they're pretty big.
They're probably tired of hearing it.
Yeah, they probably are. They probably are.
So I wanted to step back real quick and just touch a little bit more on the Navy thing. What is it like? Can you even put into words what it's like to, like, basically live on a submarine? I know it's hard. You're away from family and friends and loved ones. But what about just the experience? What is it like basically living under the ocean?
It's obviously you never really know whether it's day or night above the water, and you don't know what the weather's like. I tell people, you know, we would go to sea, and by the time we got back to San Diego after 6 months, there was all new shows on TV. There was new songs on the radio. Life keeps going, and your life kind of is, you know, you're like a Rip Van Winkle there when you come back. And but when you're on board the boat, I have people put their arms out to either side and turn around 360 degrees and say, you know, there was maybe one place on the boat that you could do that without touching something. And if you could do that, you couldn't put your hand straight above your head without touching something there, you know. So it was one or the other. It was always a tight fit. And so you have to deal with that. And, you know, you just learn to do it. And people that don't last, I guess.
So, 6 months, wow, that's a long time anyway, really. Think about it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we would go to sea for 6 months, but we would pull in to ports overseas, so you did get some time off the boat. It was, you know, we were young and crazy, and it was like being shot out of a cannon because you had money in your pocket and you'd been cooped up. And so,
right.
And you, where did we go? We ran through a dark, crowded bar instead of going for fresh air.
Right.
That's youth right there.
There you go. Be young, right?
Yeah.
I forgot what that's like, being young, so we won't even go there. They say they eat pretty well on the submarines. Is that true?
Yeah, we probably did. We probably ate better. At least that's what they always told us, that we ate better. You know, there were probably times that we argued with that, but that we did eat better than some of the other branches or even some other ships in the service. But we didn't get anything fresh.
All right.
You know, because we weren't getting supplied while we were out there. We had to load up and take everything that we were going to bring with us, and that was all we were going to get until we pulled in somewhere. I do remember times when they weren't serving hot food because they didn't want to run the dishwasher because it would make noise. And, that was some interesting times, and can't really talk about some of those even to this day. But, you know, I'm glad I went through those experiences. You don't always like them when
right.
you're doing it. But you look back now and you learned a lot from them. You made a lot of good friends, friends that I have to this day. And I encourage everybody that I can to, you know, spend some time there and spend some time in the service. You don't have to make a career of it, but it'll definitely shape your life more than people realize.
Right. Now one of the things I'm just going to take a minute and do a couple of mentions here. I just wanted to remind everybody, if you get a chance, visit lifeandhomes.com. It's kind of a new generation real estate magazine. It's definitely a new business plan that if you look into it, if you're somebody that does franchising and you look into it, you will like the business plan if you see it. It's a no-brainer at that point. Kind of thing that sells itself, lifeandhomes.com. If you get a chance, everybody also visit cybervillage.com. I have a network of social networking websites called Cyber Village. I post a lot of the articles and transcriptions and stuff from the radio show over there. And Steve, do you want to give any shout-outs, websites, appearances, stuff like that?
Yes. If people go to myspace.com/SteveTheNuclearGuy, my schedule for upcoming gigs is posted there. The next big show I have coming up is May 12th in St. Ignace, Michigan at the Ketawan Casino. And then the following day will be in Sault Ste. Marie. And then May 15th, two shows at the Potawatomi Bingo Casino in Milwaukee, an 8 o'clock show and a 10 o'clock show. And the rest of my schedule's there. The 24th, I'll be at Zany's in Chicago. And but they can check my website, myspace.com/SteveTheNuclearGuy, for upcoming occurrence information.
A lot of times when I talk to people who are in, whether it's business or, like I say, it kind of harkens back to being a self-promoter, the entrepreneurial spirit, there's usually some kind of influence in either they were growing up, or there's something like, you know, somebody owned their own business or some type of influence that kind of, and I don't know that it necessarily because it doesn't go like somebody might have been a business person, and then the next generation, you know, is doing speeches or doing act. It's kind of a creative process that I think more so than being influenced, it kind of gets passed down. Do you have anybody who's influenced you in the past, or people who you've looked at and kind of learned from, or anything like that?
Well, I would say my grandfather. He was a business owner. He was active in local politics in the Rochester suburbs, and he was never hesitant to speak his mind. And I think that's if you don't always realize it when you're growing up what kind of influence that they have on you. But looking back, I think that that was if you know being asked that question right now. Looking back, I would have to say that my grandfather was a very big influence, and he had a sense of humor that, you know, maybe I didn't appreciate when I was younger because I didn't always understand it. But, you know, looking back now, it was pretty interesting. And I do a whole bit about growing up in an Italian family and talk about my grandparents. And so I would say that, you know, he definitely helped shape where I'm coming from now.
Well, tell us a little more about your routine or kind of what's going on these days in your life. How's you're full time now on the traveling, the comedic traveling, and I know you attended some workshops and stuff like that. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. When I first started, I took a class at Comics Cafe, which is now defunct, but in a through two comics, professional comics that are from Rochester, Mike Danber and Ralph Tetta, and they've both become very good friends of mine and kind of mentors to this business for me, and I've learned a lot from them. But they help to develop how to write material and teach me some of the business side of the business and how to promote myself and that type of thing. And then you just got to get out there and do it. You got to look for every opportunity to get on stage that you can, every open mic possible, and then you got to be willing to get in the car and start driving some miles so that you can get on stage and start being in front of different audiences, because if you are in front of the same audience all the time and they learn your jokes, then you know, they laugh at them maybe two or three times, and then they know what the punchline is, so it's not a surprise anymore. And
right.
So you have to stretch yourself. You have to go out there where you don't know anybody, because when you go on the road, that's the situation you're going to be in. So you have to be willing to get out there and test your material in front of audiences that you're not familiar with. And learn how to do that, and learn how to relate to them. I really enjoy these shows I have coming up. They're all casino shows, and you know, that's really nice. You're being put up in a really great place and all that. But I really enjoy the small towns. I live in a small town right now. It's a farming community, and I love going to the small towns. Where they may have limited entertainment choices. And so they come out for that monthly comedy show, and they're really excited about it. And I can relate to those people because, you know, I live in that same kind of town. And yeah, you'll poke fun at the fact that it's a small town, and everybody laughs, they know, but it's a way of relating to them also. And
right.
I think that's really nice.
I find it interesting that you almost have to, when you were explaining that, I was thinking to myself, geez, there's a whole new layer of kind of management of like material, because if you were to go, say you did a circuit around, say, the Northeast, and you ended up in the same city a second time, you have to, or even worse yet, a third or fourth or fifth time, you have to get to a point where you have it written down what material you used in that city last time or the time before that. It almost comes down to like a management process where you have to remember who you talked to, what you said, and not only that, what you got, if you got a reaction out of it or not. Was it funny? So maybe you reused.
That's true. And what a lot of places will do is they'll try to rotate the people through that they bring through so that you're not there more than once every 6 months at the max, so that people don't say, well, you know, we just heard this guy, you know,
right.
We've seen his act. They want to stretch you out a little bit so that when they bring you back, people don't necessarily remember your whole act. You can't rewrite a whole act every 6 months. There's a lot more to it than that. So they want to keep it fresh, so they rotate you, you know, around like that, so you're not coming right back next month or whatever.
And, right. Yeah. You don't want to hit them too many times in too short a time frame. That
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What about your? Like, you're working on a DVD now, expecting criticality at any time. That's a nuke reference.
Oh, that is a nuke reference. That's correct. I'm glad you caught that. I'm sure a lot of people don't always catch that, but the people in the nuclear business will catch that. And it's kind of my way, raising a glass of beer to my buddies that are still in the business, and which is a big part of my act. I do talk about that and about spending some time in that business in my act. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that being released, hopefully, sometime this year. We thought we were going to get it out last year, but that didn't happen. So we're hoping to get it out this year. And if anyone's familiar with the nuclear business, the cover of the DVD is a picture of myself photoshopped floating in a reactor refueling cavity. I'm pretty happy with that. I think it's a pretty good way to promote the album. And that's where that is. There's a glowing reactor underneath me, and I have a floating chair that I put in the lake, right on Lake Ontario, and we have like a 5 or 6 foot cliff looking down into the water, and I had my wife take a picture of me in the floating chair with while I was holding a beer, and then I had it photoshopped onto a picture of a reactor cavity, so it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Not everybody people that aren't in the nuclear business might not understand all of it, but they'll get the gist of it. If they watch Homer Simpson, they'll get the gist of it, I guess.
So for those of us who are geeks, which I include myself in that, and for the kind of people that have no clue what your title means on that, why don't you go ahead and explain? Give us how can tell us about what criticality means?
Well, criticality is when the reactor is self-sustaining. When you're doing a reactor startup, when you're looking at all your indications, they tell you every time you move control rods to expect it to go critical anytime you move those, so that when it does, you're ready for it, because you don't want to raise power past that point, because then you have a problem controlling it. So you have to expect it to happen each and every time that you move the controls until it actually is self-sustaining itself with fission. And so they drill that into you, expect it at any time. So is relating to my act, well, you know, expect the act to be critical at any time. It's liable to go crazy. So I got an incoming call, and I'm not going to take it, obviously. So.
Well, we're listening. Go ahead, take it.
No. My wife's listening, too. I mean, you never know if it's my girlfriend. So.
Yeah. You have to be careful about that. So criticality is something that sounds bad, but in reality it's good because it's at the point where if you didn't touch anything else, the thing keeps going, basically, right?
Yes, and it was just stay at 100% power and be fine. So.
Now, when did you say that's coming out?
Hopefully sometime towards the end of this year.
Okay. We'll watch for that.
I don't have an exact date for you, but hopefully.
Yeah, because you're on the road and you got a lot of things going on, so who knows?
Yeah, I'm hoping that it's out, maybe for next year's Christmas stocking stuffers. It would be a great time for it to come out.
Some of the coolest stories are really, if you cover it when they start, kind of a thing. And so I always like to talk to people about, like, well, when you started your business, did you work out of your house, out of your garage, out of your whatever? And basically right now you're working on the road, though, so that's kind of not a pertinent question to you, right?
I'm working on the road, but when I'm home, I'm always – I'm either writing material or I'm on my computer trying to book work. So, yeah, I am working out of my house and in my car, and they're sometimes sleeping in my car. And on the road, yeah, it's in everywhere, almost 24/7 type of deal, and which is good though because that's real life. Real life is that's some of the funniest stuff, and the stuff that really happens is the funniest stuff. It's always funnier than some of the stuff I can make up. That's for sure. The stuff that's really happened, and then you just twist it a little bit, and you got some funny stuff to talk about. So, just got to keep your eyes and ears open all the time.
Yeah, constantly taking it in and getting it down on paper and practicing it and kind of going over it and over and over. And then when you do from show to show, you kind of can hone it as you go, kind of evolve it as you go from show to show.
Yes.
Do you do that, or do you kind of stick to the same exact work?
Well, you stick to the same outline at least, but, depending on what your audience is, myself, I find it easier to talk to people that are a little bit closer to my age. I'm not hip to a lot of the pop culture, and I talk a lot about life experience stuff, so if I'm talking in front of a room full of college kids sometimes, they're looking at me like, what are you talking about? Their parents would be laughing, but they're looking at me like, what are you talking about? And I've even written jokes that poke fun at that fact. So if I can go a little bit off of the PG section now, since we're not live, is that one of the things is that I ask if there's people in the room that are empty nesters now or their kids away at college or whatever,
right.
and it will almost always be the husband will say yes, and I'll have to ask, is this your wife's, lady sitting next to him? Yes, it is. Okay, because the question's for her, and I ask her, when your kids moved out, did you at least think about, she's all embarrassed, everyone's laughing. But the reason I ask that is because the college kids, and I explain it, I see the college kids, they still are a little bit uneasy thinking about someone their parents' age doing that. And the question for them is how do they know they weren't conceived? And then they're at a loss for words. They don't know, So, I talk about my divorce and they haven't been through, and so they're looking at me, they don't relate to it. The divorced people in the room, the married guys in the room, they're screaming amen and making it sound like a church service. But the college kids are looking at me like, what are you talking about? As far as pop culture, I talk about TV shows. I have a Joe Friday reference in my show, and you know, I say they don't even have a clue who I'm talking about. All I can tell them is to look it up on TV Land, you know, and but their parents know, and their parents are laughing at the reference because they get it, and so it's interesting. It makes it fun, and it's a way to relate to some of the younger kids that might be in the audience, because you know it's the big elephant in the room that, you know, I'm as old as their parents, and point it out, don't deny it there, because there it is. And
you know, get it out on the table. So to
speak. Get it right out there. You know, and it usually works. It usually works. So it's always fun.
I was just searching online to just tell people if they could search, you know, like Steve the Nuclear Guy or whatever, and I actually got a result in Facebook.
Oh, great!
This is the twist on it. There's actually a guy named Steve Nuke.
Oh.
So shout out to Steve Nuke from New. It looks like he's from New York City. We just found you by accident, Steve Nuke. But,
all right.
So just to make sure we reiterate, you're Steve the Nuclear Guy, not
That's
Steve Nuke
correct.
Who's on Facebook.
Yeah. Well, I am on Facebook also, but
there you go. So everybody find him on Facebook. And how did you? What was the other way you said to find you? It was
MySpace.com/Steve the Nuclear Guy. That's got my most current schedule on there, and also on Facebook.com/Steve the Nuclear Guy, all one word, and schedules, blogs. Photos, lots of information. Lots of
work,
information.
Huh? All right, well, Steve the Nuclear Guy, thanks for coming on the show. It was a good show. Thank you for your service in the submarine service, and thanks for everything. Thanks for coming, everybody. Go look up Steve the Nuclear Guy, find out when he's coming to a town near you. Maybe he'll be coming to the central New York area. There's a big casino, small town, big casino. It's perfect for you, right around the corner.
I would love it. I've been trying to get in there for a while. It's only 2 hours from my house to go to
probably
Verona
tough to get
there.
Into.
Yeah. So, but thanks for having me, Rob. It was a lot of fun.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
I just want to remind everybody real quick to visit lifeandhomes.com. What I call it, I don't think they call themselves this, but I like to make my own names up for things, the kind of a new generation real estate marketing company, lifeandhomes.com. And also don't forget to come to one of the numerous cyber villages that I have, cybervillage.com. Thanks for coming, everybody. Have a great day. Bye.